It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome to the Kottke Ride Home for Monday, March 7th, 2022. I'm Jackson Bird. Today, after 2 years, why have some of us never gotten COVID? Plus, the surprisingly artistic and wonderful squirrel census. And a volcanic rock in Japan rumored to contain a 1,000-year-old demonic spirit has just been found split in two. NBD. Here are some of the cool things from the news today. As we enter our third year of the COVID-19 pandemic and the 2-year anniversary today of this podcast in its initial form as a coronavirus daily briefing, the global death toll has now passed 6 million. Nearly a sixth of those deaths have occurred in the United States, although the Associated Press notes that worldwide, the overall number is probably much larger. This is due to poor record keeping and testing, as well as deaths indirectly caused by the pandemic. Like, for example, someone who may have died of a preventable cause because they were unable to receive treatment because the hospitals were full. It is an incredibly sobering number. And even as cases fall for the time in many parts of the world, they're on the rise in the Western Pacific, particularly in island nations just now getting their first cases. And as we grapple with these numbers and remind ourselves of just how long we've been living in this new reality, one question seems to be surfacing with a lot of researchers. Why is it really that some people still have never caught COVID? 2 full years in, multiple variants, lots of surges, and yet there are plenty of healthcare workers face-to-face with actively contagious patients, partners and caregivers of infected loved ones, teachers, restaurant workers, and others regularly exposed to groups of people in contained spaces, plenty of whom have simply never caught the virus, at least to their knowledge. Personally, I've taken a fairly cautious approach throughout the pandemic and gotten tested regularly, but I've still been in New York City during all of our major surges, literally working in a bar once a week during the highly contagious Omicron surge when it seemed like everyone got COVID, and I still never got it. I mean, I feel incredibly lucky, of course, but also a little stumped. A friend of mine's doctor told her recently about a new study recruiting participants who have never gotten COVID, and I'm sure there are many of that kind being developed right now. I'm going to see if I can get in, and we'll keep you posted with any insights I'm able to share if I do. But a number of scientists do have some hunches already, based on some of the things that we know about COVID and about other coronaviruses. Writing in The Guardian this morning, senior lecturer and researcher in viral immunology at the University of Birmingham, Dr. Zanya Stamataki, explained, quote, "Some people may clear the virus quickly because they have pre-existing antibodies and memory immune cells that recognize the virus. These could be cross-reactive memory T cells generated previously to fight similar coronaviruses that cause the common cold. There is evidence of higher prevalence of endemic, non-COVID coronavirus infections in the young and reduced cross-reactive T cell presence in older people." End quote. Stamataki herself works with live replicating SARS-CoV-2, teaches in person at a university, and has school-age children. And yet, to her knowledge, she never got it. It is possible she had an asymptomatic case before getting vaccinated and before testing picked up as a regularly accessible activity in her area. And that is the case for many of us. Maybe we did have it and just never knew. Stamatakis adds, natural infection does not offer long-term protection. How many people did we hear about who caught COVID for a second time during the Omicron surge, for example? She says that she's not convinced that had she caught a mild or asymptomatic case unknowingly earlier in the pandemic, she would have been immune to the next one. And she further adds, quote, there's also a possibility that different immune systems respond differently to the virus. For SARS-CoV-2 to infect, the spike protein on the surface of the virus needs to stick to specific proteins on the target cells, like the ACE2 protein. Is it possible that those resistant to infection have different levels of ACE2 than others? Age-related ACE2 expression in the lungs of children compared with adults may partly explain why children often show milder infection. It's also possible that some of us may have rare types of ACE2 that the coronavirus spike cannot stick to. Differences in protein expression between people are known as polymorphisms, and they're valuable to discover. People that have a rare genetic polymorphism for CCR5 protein have been immune to HIV infection. To support this theory, recent genetic analyses have revealed that rare types of ACE2 may influence susceptibility to COVID. End quote. Stamatakis also brings up studies in healthcare workers who consistently tested negative that showed the presence of pre-existing T cells that recognize peptides from less variable parts of the virus than the spike protein. And being that the spike protein is what a lot of vaccines specifically target, she warns against relying solely on spike targeting vaccines as new variants emerge. There is also a new study out building on the long-observed correlation between blood type and SARS-CoV-2 infection severity. The new study published last week in the journal PLOS Genetics screened over 3,000 blood proteins and found a causal association between COVID-19 severity and the enzyme known as ABO, which is responsible for determining a person's blood type. In this study, severity was defined as hospitalization or death. While the study does not dig into the relationship between specific blood types and COVID-19 severity, the causal association between severity and that enzyme do help validate prior observational findings that specifically linked type A blood to increased severity risk. Quoting New Atlas, as co-last author on the study Jerome Breen explains, these findings help researchers investigate novel therapeutic pathways to help treat COVID-19. For example, several blood proteins were identified in the study as causally linked to a decreased risk of severe disease. These proteins, known as adhesion molecules, play a role in the interactions between immune cells and blood vessels. The researchers hypothesize these adhesion molecules may be helping moderate the severity of late-stage COVID-19, and it may be possible to turn this discovery into a therapy to prevent sick patients deteriorating in the hospital. End quote. Of course, blood type alone is not enough to mean that you absolutely are or aren't at risk. The same other factors we've been hearing about the whole time, like existing medical conditions and age, can play a large role, as does your work and living situation and individual risk assessment, most of all, whether you are vaccinated or not. And going back to Stamatakis with a final reminder, quote, while we're still learning about what may be causing COVID resistance, we can't be sure why someone like me hasn't yet tested positive. But what I do know is that because of the likelihood of emerging variants, there is no guarantee that I won't develop COVID still. Even if you've been lucky so far, don't take your chances. End quote. Have you heard the good word about the squirrel census? Founded in 2012 in Atlanta, Georgia by Jamie Allen, the squirrel census seeks to, well, count how many squirrels there are in a given park. The group is run by some data scientists, at least one cartographer, and other folks with relevant skills, but it's mostly made up of volunteers who get interested in the cause. They've made headlines over the years when they've released datasets on the squirrels in Inman Park in Atlanta and later in Central Park in New York City. And that 2018 report of New York City actually ended up being one of the most comprehensive maps of the park in the last 70 years. But why? Why count and record data on squirrels? John Murray, the chief squirrel correspondent, told Gothamist recently, quote, as New Yorkers, we tend to hurry from place to place and not really stop. We encourage a little bit of appreciation of our environment. What people do with the data is up to them. End quote. And people really are doing things with that data. Their latest published report of 24 New York City parks taken at the start of March 2020, mere days before lockdown would substantially change human activity in parks, is hosted on NYC Open Data, an official city-run site. And certain scientists are grateful for the amount of data coming out of the squirrel census. Evolutionary biologist Elizabeth Carlin, who was not involved with the census, told Gothamist, quote, "There's a lot of questions that we have about urban organisms. And if we had these historical data sets, which now the squirrel census is building, we can begin to ask those questions." End quote. And continuing further from Gothamist, quote, "Squirrels offer these insights because they've been adapting to humans for a very long time. They evolved from fleeing people as perceived threats to eagerly approaching tourists for food at the southern end of Central Park. These adaptations are important to study for climate change," according to one of the squirrel census's scientific advisors, Colin Jarlmack, chair of environmental studies at New York University. He said more and more animals are being displaced from their natural habitats or struggling to find food sources because of climate change or urbanization. Studying squirrel behaviors can tell us which animals already have the habits to thrive going forward and which ones might need assistance in the future. End quote. So the data may end up being incredibly useful down the road, but for now, the group is just having some fun, getting out in nature, acknowledging other creatures in our ecosystem, learning a little bit, and meeting new people. At least one couple met counting squirrels and are now married. The group also has a killer design sense. Their website looks straight out of a Wes Anderson movie with hand-drawn clickable illustrations, copious serif typeface, and classified style ads for their mostly Atlanta-based sponsors. They've also got really great, equally well-designed merch, t-shirts, number 2 pencils, maps of the parks, and a bright yellow 45 featuring an audio version of the Central Park Squirrel Census performed by members of the group on location, and is much more artistic than it sounds. You can listen on SoundCloud for free if you aren't ready to buy the 45 just yet. And you may be wondering how exactly one takes a squirrel census, as squirrels can move around pretty quickly and, at least to the untrained eye, look quite similar. So how do you make sure you're not counting the same squirrel 5 times? Gothamist joined the group on an outing last December and found out, quoting again, "Murray and Stuart Bowler, northern liaison for the squirrel census, stood in Central Park with clipboards clutched to their chests and number 2 pencils, scanning the ground back and forth and then looking up in the crook of tree branches for 20 minutes, the time allotted for the count of each of the 350 sections of the park created from a topographic map made by their own cartographer, Nat Slaughter. Each section was counted on 2 different occasions for accuracy. While double counting a squirrel does happen, the census uses a formula adapted from squirrel biologist Von Flegger that accounts for missing one of these short-haired denizens or counting them twice. It's adjusted by one of their scientific advisors, Donald Bisanzio, a human and animal epidemiologist at RTI, a nonprofit research institute with a mission to solve global issues through science-backed solutions. The new census of 24 parks is not as rigorous as their 2019 Central Park census and is a flash count that provides a snapshot. Counting is only a small part of the data that's collected. Volunteers fill out a form that includes details such as the presence of litter and other animals. Many entry lines are also dedicated to detailing a physical description, the critter's activities, and whether it approaches humans or flees. End quote. And if you want to get involved, no matter where you live, there are a few ways to do so. First, you can call their new toll-free number, 1-833-NYC-SQRL. That is 1-833-692-7775. There, you'll get a fun audio experience that includes data, original music, a meditation exercise, stories from famous squirrels throughout history, fortune-telling, and other wacky antics. Which tracks with how the group describes themselves on their website as, quote, "a multimedia science design art and storytelling project focusing on the Eastern Grey. Mostly, we serve as a liaison between believe and make-believe. We're like something out of a movie, but the truth is, so are you. Join us. Follow along. Play a part." End quote. And if you'd like to play a part, you can download the Squirrel Census app for iOS. It's a simple app with the following official instructions. Quote, "It's easy. See squirrel? Push squirrel button. See another? Push button again. Every time you push the button, this app records a squirrel sighting, including location, time, date, and weather conditions. End quote. On the app or on the website, you can also access the official Squirrel Sighter map, which shows all the places people have recorded squirrel sightings via the app. Mostly in North America, but there are a decent amount of sightings from around the world. So no matter where you live, you can take part in the squirrel census. There's lots to dig into with this group, and it's all pretty great, so I do highly recommend checking out all that they have to offer at the links I am dropping in the show notes. Well, this can't be good. A volcanic rock in Japan, nicknamed the Killing Stone, that legend says contains the spirit of a murderous 12th century woman, has been found split in two. This stone has long been rumored to kill anyone who merely comes into contact with it, so seeing it split in half has left many familiar with the legend quite alarmed. Quoting Atlas Obscura, "In traditional Japanese culture, the kitsune, or foxes, are frequently depicted as mischievous spirits with shape-shifting powers. The most infamous of such creatures is Tamamo no Mae, who took the form of a beautiful woman to seduce the emperor and became his mistress in the mid-12th century. Legend has it that Tamamo no Mae's true identity was a nine-tailed fox, at least over 2,000 years old at the time. She had seduced several lords and kings prior to this, resulting in the collapse of the Shang dynasty and the deaths of 1,000 men in an ancient Indian kingdom called Magadha. After an onmyoji, or mystic, exposed her identity, Tamamo no Mae was chased off and hunted down by a massive army, and finally defeated in the plains of Nasu by a heroic samurai. But her story didn't end there. It's said that Tamamo no Mae's body transformed into a murderous stone, whose powers took the lives of all who approached it, humans and animals alike. Feared by locals, many Buddhist monks visited this Seishosiki, or killing stone, to calm the fox's vengeful presence, only to be killed by it. Finally, in 1385, a monk struck the stone, destroying it, scattering its pieces across Japan." End quote. Many, though, believe that the original killing stone with Tamamo no Mae's fiendish spirit inside of it is the one at Mount Nasu, a famous hot springs location that takes pride in its association with the stone and the visitors that it brings to the area. So as not to tempt the spirit, visitors are prohibited from getting too close to the killing stone. In actuality, the buffer zone around the stone is due to the area's volcanic presence. There's a ton of hydrogen sulfide and sulfur dioxide permeating the area, which might actually explain why people who got too close to the stone hundreds of years ago ended up dying. But now, the killing stone itself has been destroyed, or at least somehow split in two. Visitors to the area posted photos over the weekend of the broken stone, which is believed to have happened sometime in the last few days. Local media says the split was likely caused by cracks that appeared several years ago, which allowed rainwater to enter and then weakened the structure of the stones. But others know the real truth. The demon spirit of Tamamo no Mae has been resurrected, and all hell is about to break loose. Well, the annual Spring Apple event is happening tomorrow, March 8th at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. These March or April Apple events usually cover second-tier devices, but there are some holding out hope that we might get a bigger announcement about the M2 chip. Almost certainly, we'll be hearing about the newest generation iPhone SE, which ever since its substantial makeover in 2020 has really been catching my eye. We may also get the official drop of iOS 15.4, which has been in beta for a while and includes the new emojis, the ability to unlock Face ID while wearing a mask, and more. And if you want full coverage of the event tomorrow, be sure to check out our sister show, The Tech Meme Ride Home, with expert host Brian McCullough. But that is it from me for today. As always, this show was produced by Ride Home Media and Kotke.org. I'm Jackson Bird, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.